Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back. I'm actually going to be doing, for the most part, many of my shows we kind of pre-record. We record content and subjects and so forth. And I don't really get into marketing on a regular basis. But the past week, I've tried to do a little mix of marketing as well as interviews and so forth. We will be doing, actually, the good news is we're going to be doing an interview with Brent Winters regarding common law. And I know, so one of the things that I deal with is I deal with a lot of people that have an education regarding the Constitution based on the current paradigm. And when I say current paradigm, you know, that the Federalist Papers were the guides. And so the Federalist Papers, and I'm here to tell you, I can go through the highlights and points of the Federalist Papers. They do nothing to really create clarity to the terms and definitions of the Constitution. That's why we go through the ratification debates. That's why I emphasize the importance of the ratification debates, because these aren't just insightful words. These are the words that were used to sell the Constitution to the states. Anybody that tries to marginalize this concept of contract law is playing in a very dangerous field, because that is how we have had ambiguity. That's how we've slid, and that's how the course of direction has completely changed from the intent of the framers. Clearly, the framers wanted to leave sovereignty to the states. And so without necessarily being really critical of the common law paradigm, it's almost like, and it's not almost like, it's in similarities to the sovereign citizen movement. The sovereign citizen movement is a reaction to an unconstitutional move done by the governments. And when I say governments, I'm talking federal, state, and so forth. That it started with the federal government, snowballed out to all these other entities, government entities, polities is what we would call them. But my point is that the sovereign citizen movement is basing their whole concept on a bunch of bad information. They don't understand that what the federal government did was unconstitutional. Well, but they did it during martial law, which legitimized. If you want to believe illegitimacy, if you want to believe something legitimate out of illegitimacy, then you can always make your rational thoughts. But there is zero evidence that the states, or actually the federal government, received the power from the states. In other words, the states did not delegate the power to the general government in martial law to be able to go and create corporations and to bail its financial bailiwick out. It could not do that. What it needed to do was it could take on debt, but it could not take on a contract of transferring American wealth to private entities. It just doesn't have that power to do that. It can either borrow and it can tax. Its financial framework was very, very tight. So bottom line, the sovereign citizen movement is built, you know, it's attached itself to the house of cards that the federal government has been creating, or I should say, those nefarious people that have been pushing our government into this centralized government to connect to a world centralized government. Because the Constitution, as it was written and as it stands, has full autonomy and full protection from those types of things. So anyway, the common law concept is completely different. It is founded on founding principles, but in my research, I'm just going to tell you up front, in my research, and I point out to you that there were a couple of ratification debates in Virginia, and I want to think it was Massachusetts, maybe it was North Carolina, where they pointed out that common law was not dictated by the Constitution. It was injected. So the, in other words, the original intent of the framers, just like slavery, it was a state issue. The states, and one of the reasons why, and you're going to get into the history with Brent Winters, common law is a Christian concept. And if you understand Madison's paradigm regarding the different interpretations, the different facets and so forth, common law was not necessarily common law was not necessarily tied to all the, you know, it didn't have the same association to every Christian faith. And I say that because the Roman Catholic Church used civil law. And if you understand the state of Louisiana, and I've said this before, the state of Louisiana has utilized civil law as its basis of law. In other words, the states weren't held to a very specific standard. But if you look at the Bill of Rights, and I want to say it's either the Fifth Amendment or the Fourth or Sixth. It's in one of the amendments where you'll find that the Bill of Rights was guaranteeing common law in regards to what we'll call trials by jury. And so, it's the Sixth Amendment, and it's the right to speedy trial. And this is where it says it. In suits at common law, it's not saying all suits will be within common law. It says, in suits at common law, where the value in controversy shall exceed $20, the right of trial by jury shall be preserved, and no fact tried by jury shall be otherwise re-examined in any court of the United States than according to the rules of the common law. And so this is where you find the attachment of common law, but not the declaration that common law must be used. It says in suits at common law. So does that mean that Louisiana is violating? Now, the right of trial by jury shall be preserved. So there has been talk and there has been insinuendos regarding how, because Louisiana, even in capital crime, was never a trial by jury. I don't think trial by jury was, and I think in talking to Mr. Winters, we'll get into these types of things. But what I want to do is I want to have a really good academic conversation regarding this and a true expert. Now, not to be adversarial, but again, I'm coming with a background and or a level of information that the framers had clearly articulated why they didn't want common law to be the law of the land. It's not even the law of the U.S. Constitution. Technically, the U.S. Constitution framed itself into its own very specific laws that it could create. It could create laws on immigration. It could create laws on the coining and currency. It could create law regarding debt and taxation, but not in transforming or creating corporations. So as you understand, and I'm going down this rat hole, and I know I'm probably going to be running out of time. I've just got a couple minutes left in this first segment. We're going to be disclosing a lot of facts and information. There is, and I'll put this out here, there is a concept that is being propagated that many people are starting to believe that, you know, we're heading into martial law. There's been these declarations, and there's even some people forecasting possibly the 1st of April. Now, will that be an April Fool's joke? I don't know. I'm hearing all sorts of interesting things. But what I wanted to do was I wanted to place constitutional context to what our government could really do and what it can't do. The federal government, as you know, is constrained constitutionally, and the Constitution is being violated in so many different ways. There's a lot of people that are saying, hey, this is good. This is, you know, this money that they're going to give us, that's, you know what? I honestly see the federal government has the ability to actually not tax people, but to just come out and give money to people and to arbitrarily come out with bailouts, whether that be in welfare, whether that be corporate bailouts, bank bailouts, as you know, those are unconstitutional. The federal government cannot differentiate how it treats one state from how it treats another. And ergo, we are put into a box of how the federal government is supposed to treat each and every single state, as well as the citizens of these states, and how they have been violating this. It's one of the things I want you to walk away with constantly, every time you listen to the show, is you hear and start putting context to what I'm saying, and you start understanding, you know, the limitations of the constitutional framework for the general government, as well as the states. You should be going, you know what, if we do not exercise republic review, we will have hell to pay. And forgive me for the expletive, but we will rue the day if we do not begin to act. And so far, the past couple of years, this is what, my 505th episode of Reclaiming the Republic. And so it's not a matter of bragging. It is a matter of, well, we've had kind of smooth sailing and real opportunity. Unfortunately, what it takes is things like this that actually prick you to say, oh my gosh, I have to act. We have to start pursuing full compliance to our Constitution. If we don't, we are hosed. We will be right back after these two promos with more constitutional context. Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our Republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue.
Okay, so let me, because I didn't even get it out there, let me remind you that this show is also sponsored by Reclaiming the Republic as well as republicreview.org. And that you are listening to the only show that gives you the academic-based evidence to get the federal government and the academic-based solutions to get the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution. We were not given a system to allow the federal government to do anything and everything they choose to do. So, with that, the other question is, as I wanted to lead into it in the last segment, because as I was explaining, marketing content as well as academic content, when I'm reading articles, well, not articles, but actually when I'm reading the founding documents and other documents to help set the paradigm of this limited general government that was created via the Constitution that people call this almighty federal government. Are you going to do something? Are you going to become a part of the solution? Or do you want to continue being a part of the problem? I believe most Americans do not want to see the things that are going to happen happen. Now, some of this stuff may be great. Some of this stuff may be, you know, really nice, like putting China back in the box. Obviously, China has been waging economic and biological as well as cyber warfare against us, and any other type of prodding and harassment, and what's the other word for it? There's harassment as well as aggravation. They've been trying to agitate and aggravate us any and every possible way they can, even militarily. They try to cut our ships off. They try to bully us. And us being the big guy, we try not to, you know, entertain that. But I'm here to tell you that they're waiting and they're preparing themselves and they're positioning themselves for an absolute military conflict. And the whole time, I'll get into this, the whole time we have been putting money into them to wage this war against us, to knock us off the peg, and they're doing it not necessarily for the world, but for the global elitists who want to actually pull the world into their global governance. So with that, are you a part of the problem or are you going to be a part of the solution? Because the only way you become a part of the solution is to get involved. We have a listener drive, and it's a constant listener drive. The listener drive is always dry. We always want you to continue to expand this listenership, because as people start to understand the message that there's actually a solution, you know, that the Constitution isn't this noble guide of governance, it's a simple compact. And within the compact, it was allowed, the federal government was given the power to be able to create laws pursuant to the enumerated powers in the compact. Like I said, they can make laws in the pursuant of immigration regarding the coining of money or taking on debt and taxing or how they service that debt. They were never given the ability to create corporations. They were never given the ability to create healthcare or even housing standards, labor. The academic evidence is overwhelming. I'm working on really good educational videos that I want you to start firing out to people, because when you watch these are just little blurbs that prove the point that you have to amend the Constitution if you want to create a Department of Transportation. Well, if you want to create a Department of Transportation that requires an amendment, the same thing would go with labor. The same thing would go with housing, healthcare, welfare, anything that the federal government is doing that's not enumerated. So anyway, we definitely want you to help get this message out. So start sharing the content, poking people in the eye, prodding them, and getting them to at least start listening. Either that, or actually find your favorite show and forward the link, or just download it and forward it to them and say, hey, listen to this. You know, can you take a minute and just tell them the segment of the time of the show to say, go listen to minute 30 to 37. Narrow it down for them so they go, wow, that's a kind of a powerful message. This is not my message, my friends. This is the message that is coming from the dust of the framers. They are speaking from the dust in these ratification debates. They are speaking to us from the past as to exactly what they gave us and what the terms of this compact were. So please help. If you want to be a part of the solution, if you don't want to see your currency change, if you don't want to see the federal government seize control, you know, I get so frustrated in talking to, you know, people that poke their chests out like champions of the Constitution. And you know, what really upsets me is these so-called people that are champions of the Constitution trying to create lies and obfuscating the reality of Republic Review by telling you that we're a portal to an Article 5 convention. You know what? The only thing that is going to help us is, and they all agree, that we have to educate America regarding the Constitution. There is no better way of educating America than the process of Republic Review, because as they watch and as they listen to the auditing process, America will get very smart and people will realize, and as a matter of fact, the hope of communists and socialists in America will be dashed. They will realize that they are locked out. There is no mechanism other than an Article 5 amendment, regardless of the path, an Article 5 amendment in creating socialism at the United States level. So the beauty is that even though we may have enough dolts out there, they all happen to live in just a few of the states. It requires 38 states to get this nation to embrace and change us from a hybrid constitutional enumerated powered government to an all-power centralized general government of communism and socialism. And so everybody will realize this is no way. And as a matter of fact, as people start realizing the protections that they have from the federal government and the ability to do so much more at the state level and getting the states to work together. And so this whole education process of Republic Review will, it's like parting the heavens and understanding what the divine hand of providence has given us. And it will get government out of the way so that we can start recognizing the divine hand of providence in this society that we have. It's, as people want to call it, the Great Awakening. Republic Review parts those curtains. It opens those doors and windows of heaven to it gets the government out of the way and allows ministers and teachers and churches and educational academies and so forth to go back to the path of enlightenment and teach people the truth. Anyway, I don't want to belabor the point. I'm almost through the second segment, and I have a lot of stuff I wanted to get through. I kind of updated what we're going to be doing in content, and I've got a lot of work to do, but a couple of these interviews are definitely going to be good. But let me just start talking about what the heck is going on. People are talking about martial law. Anybody that has been listening to this show understands the federal government cannot declare martial law and send in the military, National Guard, or anything other than the militia, because they've ignored and allowed the militia to be disbanded. Trump needs to basically make a call. Every state will now stand up a militia per county, that every county will have a militia and every county will actually start receiving funding from the federal government. Instead of bailing out anybody, the first and most important thing he can do is reignite the militia as a part of our constitutional republic. As you understand, martial law cannot be declared in any state unless the militia is deployed in that state. Those are the words of Madison during the contract, or during the contract negotiations, the ratification process. And he declared it as, he says, you know, can the federal government even declare the, you know, martial law without deploying the militia? How absurd. They have to deploy the militia, because only the militia has the constitutional authority per Article 1, Section 8, Subsection 15 to enforce the laws of the Union. Constitutional laws of the Union, not just arbitrary laws that they created via fiat and violating the Constitution. So in other words, getting back to this concept of an enumerated Constitution, the Constitution, it's the barrier. If we allow it to be the barrier, all we have to do is say, you've got to comply to that. That is the contract. A contract on a piece of paper is just a piece of paper, and if you roll it up, you might be able to hurt somebody. But if you hold people accountable to that contract, then that contract is far more than a piece of paper. It is a legal binding document that can actually enforce and actually use political force in getting what we need. So states also have constitutions. And here's the real problem, my friends. Even though we have a federal government well outside the boundaries of the enumerated powers, we have state constitutions that actually have, and most all of them have, enumerated and general powers that have been delegated. So there is no emergency act in the Constitution that allows the federal government to, you know, empower itself in the case of emergency, other than the application of deploying the militia first. And it has to be for three purposes: either enforcing the laws of the Union, repelling insurrections, and or stopping invasions. I think it's repelling invasions and suppressing insurrections. But anyway, we'll be right back after these two promos, getting into the state constitutions and the Declaration of Emergency Powers. This is critical for you to understand. We'll be right back.
Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcasts and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Mobiusstrip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Mobiusstrip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
That number to dial in is 215-TALK-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
Okay, so understanding this nefarious network of webbing that has been created in laws. I've said this before, and you have to understand that many of the laws that your state has created, that they have amended to the Constitution, were not amendments that were driven by the people. These amendments were driven by the federal government. In other words, environmental laws and so forth. Now, your state legislators may have actually created laws and put it in there because they've used the justification that the United States Constitution is the supreme law of the land, and then they inject laws about the environment and housing and equal rights or civil rights for discrimination types of laws and so forth. Well, none of those are constitutional. They may be nice, they may be noble, they may be, really humane, but they're not constitutional. And so the fact that your government has changed those things, well, that's a problem. And what is the process of fixing that problem? Well, it would be Republic Review, because in getting your states to actually go through the contract, once you recognize those things that are unconstitutional that the federal government has done, then you try to shine the light real quick back to your state and say, well, how many of those things that are unconstitutional had driven changes in our state? A good case in point. Sometimes it's not necessarily laws that have been enacted and usurped by the federal government. It could be a ruling by the federal judges, where the federal judge says anybody can marry anybody. Well, if that's not an enumerated power, they have no jurisdiction over it, so the judges can't make that edict. And bottom line, if you have a law now on your books that says anybody can get married and it was driven by the federal government, it must be stricken. It's the same thing with abortion. It's the same thing with all of the things that they've been doing. So you have to understand that auditing the federal government is critical. You have to do this first so that you can start dismantling all the unconstitutional. And so, as you know, Jimmy Carter gave us the FEMA Act, which created FEMA to, you know, have to self-aggrandize the federal government in giving itself emergency power acts. Well, now all the states have gone out and basically had followed, you know, they tried to make some associations to the Constitution on declarations of emergencies and what have you, but none of it was tied to the militia and the terms of the Constitution. So therefore, you'll find that most of these state declaration powers that your state has are unconstitutional. Now, I'm going to just jump ahead a little bit, and I'm going to get back to this. I made a post, and a lot of people are not happy with the fact that states have these declaration emergency powers. But it's important for one, you know, that they're unconstitutional, but it's also important to understand that states are supposed to have these unlimited powers via the people. In other words, if we want our states to have these powers, and I'm going to tell you, and I'm an advocate for giving states, or actually not states, counties, more power if necessary to do, because remember, and I'll just remind you, government's primary objects are they have two primary objects. They're to protect life and property. In other words, they're not supposed to tax you out of your property. They're supposed to protect that. And so they have to be very diligent in minimizing, you know, just what a burden they're doing. And they have to constantly justify. They need to be justifying to you why they have to be doing what they're doing. Anyway, because most of this stuff should be done by the communities, by the counties, and or by churches and so forth. Anyway, so states have declaration of emergency powers. If declarations do not reference and use the militia in your state laws, then there's a high likelihood. I mean, I can't see of any other way that a state could declare an emergency and declare a state of emergency without calling forth its militia, because that is how it is supposed to do it per the U.S. Constitution. Article 4, Section 4 even talks about that, that the state has the ability in cases of emergency to pull forth the militia. Even the governor has that if during a point in time where the legislatures aren't in session, the governor or the executive has the ability to do that, or should have the ability, so therefore the state constitution should reflect that. But it can only reflect the deployment of the militia. Now, states do have the ability, if they've granted themselves the ability, over health care. Now, this is where states get into general powers. Do they have general powers over education? Do they have general powers over health care? You need to read your constitution. I am not the state. There's 50 state constitutions, and I'm not going to be able to differentiate. Maybe if I had myself the time to go through it for the next 4 or 5 years and create a table so I could differentiate between each of the states and, you know, how they're violating the Constitution, where they have general powers and enumerated powers and so forth, you know, that takes time. But I can tell you that almost every problem we have is coming from unconstitutional general government powers that have been usurped. So anyway, people who say that states cannot quarantine are constitutionally incorrect. And I'm going to say this because if your state does have currently, and even if they've been unconstitutionally driven, these laws and so forth, the state. So you got, let's get back to that object of protecting life. And let's get into the concept of people dying because of viruses. We've had flus. And oh, by the way, a little bit of history for you. George Washington died from the flu. Did you know that? But the problem is that they didn't call it the flu back then. He had some type of ailment, and the medical treatment of the day was either leeches or bleeding. He actually died from the treatment of the flu to get rid of his fever. See, what they used to do is they would bleed you out until, you know, your body would get cool because you had less blood in you. I don't understand what's whys and hows, but to me, I think that that's one of the reasons why they were doing it, because, oh, you're burning up, that's going to kill you. And so they, you know, use water and, you know, they use the external stuff to try to cool you down, but they also bled you. It was a very crude medicine back then. And the father of the country, George Washington, was killed by medical practice, the medical practice of the day. And fact of the matter is, we have now become much smarter, and as we've obtained greater and greater technology regarding viruses, DNA, and all of these things from 60s and even on, we've advanced so much so that we now have complete understanding of viruses. Now, I'm starting this because this is all about the coronavirus. And that I happen to have made a social post, and it's not a social faux pas. It's just that there are myopic people out there that are all about health freedom that are bordering on this concept of anarchy. And so what they don't want the government, and I agree that the government should not be forcing vaccinations on anybody. They should not force any treatment. If you want to bleed out your husband or wife as a treatment to the flu, I'm okay with that. That is your right. But if you kill her, then and the state has legitimate laws. We have to get to the bottom of this. And the only way we're going to do that is with Republic Review. But if the state does have legitimate laws that say you can't practice medicine or you can't do those types of things, you know, again, this could be a religious thing. And I don't think health freedom has entered into a medical practicing of religion. I believe there is a faith out there that says that they don't accept modern medicine, Seventh-day Adventists or whatever, Jehovah's Witness, I don't know which it is. But either way, the fact of the matter is that those people that are out there practicing medicine, or I should say demanding health freedom, they have some great points, but they also have a position of anarchy. Now, I don't have a problem with kids going to school that have not been vaccinated. They're the vulnerable ones. If that's your choice, if you supposedly have been vaccinated, then your child is supposed to be protected. And I'm telling you that if your child isn't protected and it gets sick because it's been vaccinated and the kid that hasn't been vaccinated doesn't get sick, well, there's some problems. I'd love to have a real expert, a subject matter expert on this, not some of these state, you know, parroting, or I should say, people at the lower levels in the states and so forth. I'm talking about a real MD, and I believe G. Edward Griffin knows somebody. Maybe I will contact him to talk to somebody about this that is a real leader in, you know, vaccinations and medical freedom and that type of stuff, because I can't believe that they're anarchists. I can't believe that they're just completely anti the technology that we've obtained from this and some smart things that we've actually been able to do. Prior to the global movement and global elitists trying to kill us and moving us and hurting us, we were actually successful in ending things like polio and so forth. We didn't have any, well, there were nefarious things like, you know, the syphilis infections of the black communities in the South. I mean, the CIA has done things like that, or I should say non-government organizations, but either way, the fact of the matter is we are evolving in enlightenment if we embrace it. And so I'm okay with, you know, this concept of social distancing, this concept of self-quarantining, and I'll get into that when we get back into our last segment, because I think it's really important to put this all into context. So let's start off with, when we come back, about subsidizing China and how China has been impacting the world. We'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much.
Folks, Red State Talk Radio has brought back its monthly newsletter. I know everyone gets a lot of emails, but this is not a daily or weekly newsletter. It's a monthly newsletter. So you will not be overwhelmed with a plethora of emails from Red State Talk Radio. Come on, it's only once a month. I'll be contributing a constitutional perspective to one of the current issues to help everyone see an alternative perspective, or what I believe would be a framer's perspective regarding the issue, to help us maintain a constitutional paradigm. I will also provide information regarding a significant historical context to the time of year so that we can remember our history, so we will not be doomed to repeat the inevitable failings from forgetting our past and origins. Just go to Red State Talk Radio and sign up for the newsletter. This way you can get a focused view of what is going on in the Republic, as well as what is going on at Red State Talk Radio. Thank you. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process.
Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255.
Okay, so when I tell you that I think the counties and states, you know, the people really need to start figuring this out. And, oh, by the way, look down. You're standing on a welcome mat, and that welcome mat is the era of biological cyber reaching across county and country and ocean boundaries to be able to reach out and affect your life. We already know our electrical grid is vulnerable. We already know that through our global travel, we have the ability to spread the plague very quickly. We already know that over the internet, through everything being connected and to this new internet of things that they want to ram down our throats, they're connecting every facet of your life. Power companies are coming out with brand new smart meters that who knows what they're going to be emitting. And so I've got a real problem. I have a real problem. Why is it that they're forcing all of these types of things upon us? Why is it that government isn't going after public utilities? And I don't want to even go down these rat holes. The bottom line is, welcome to the new era of warfare. And in aspects and in context to biological warfare that has been coming from China over the past 2 decades. Well, let's be clear. America and the world has been subsidizing China's military state with allowing them to manufacture our goods. In addition to this, we allow them to steal, because this is how they play their game. We, by taking our technology and what we want them to manufacture, it gives them the ability to steal our intellectual property. So now they can build things the way we build them. Now, this doesn't mean that it gives them, you know, the keys to innovation. This doesn't mean that they're given the ability to go down any paths, because you got to understand, the Communist Party has tight controls on what people do. And if it's not for a military purpose, it has no service. It has no use to them. China has been caught gene editing. I've even reported this, and I've reported this on my own, as well as I've reported this with G. Edward Griffin's Need to Know News. They've been gene editing with brand newborn babies' DNA and playing with their, let's just call them bad features or what have you. They've been playing with DNA to make people more pliable or whatever it is that they're doing. And I'm going to tell you, because the Communist Party is in control of everything that they do there in China, it's not for good stuff. None of it's for good stuff. It's all warfare against the world in implementing China, or not China, implementing communism with the Chinese, you know, spin to it, or filtering or what have you. And in all honesty, it is what's coming from the global elitist and what they want them to do. It is not a coincidence, folks, that all three coronaviruses have come from China. MERS, SARS, and now the COVID-19, it's not a coincidence. And as a matter of fact, how they've affected and what they've done, because they've basically been respiratory problems. And some of the information, I told you, give it more time. It takes, you know, time to measure results on, you know, the effects, how to treat this. And they're coming up with, oh, okay, so the crap I took in the Marine Corps, that was pretty hard on me, but the crap that I took in the Marine Corps, basically, how the anti-malaria pills that we took is supposedly combating this, you know, possibly better than anything else that they've got. My folks, if I understand what they're talking about, I believe those pills actually give you a light dose of malaria. If that's true, you'll never be able to give blood again, or you'll be giving somebody possibly malaria. But anyway, in a way, due to the lack of ethical boundaries and that warfare is the undertone in everything they do, China has passed most of the world in this warfare technology. In other words, in the passive-aggressive technology of cyber hacking, you know, creating viruses to mutate around the world. This is because they have open opportunities to come to America and the world to obtain the best in academic education and creating a foundation of how they can utilize our technology in warfare against us. It's also the same thing as what we call imminent technologies or emergent technologies. There's all sorts of warfare emergent technologies that China, because of the deals and more importantly, because of what Clinton has done, going back to Clinton's administration, you need to understand the types of technology he gave them. Remember, before Clinton, the Chinese and their nuclear program was working on dirt floors and in Quonset huts, and they were backwards. And because of what the Clintons have done and the ability of harnessing the technologies that he gave them and opened access to them, well, it's because now North Korea, and I've said this, Iran and these other rogue countries are China's puppets. And China is obtaining more and more puppets as we go. So, my friends, we're not in Kansas anymore. We can't think of the flu. We can't think of viruses with a cavalier attitude to say, oh, well, you know, people are going to get sick. Maybe social distancing is a solution. Maybe. But I will tell you that if you are exhibiting, because anybody with a medical background will tell you, if you begin to exhibit any type of, let's say runny nose, you know, aches, pains, that if you're exhibiting ailment, this the flu, you can feel the flu coming on, I can, then you should self-quarantine. So I made this social post that basically put it out there that says, I cannot believe why states, and what should be done is counties. But right now, counties have been neutered of the powers that they should have. This is why you've been hearing me say this, that counties need to demand constitutional conventions and rewrite their constitution so that they delegate fewer powers to the state government and retain most of the powers necessary for the counties. Now, I get it that you want to have an equalizer, like with education and so forth, because the richer counties are going to have better education if that happens. But the counties have to become a stakeholder in the republic of the state, as we've talked about in American republicanism. The reason why counties and population centers are dictating and just throwing states off the edge, like in Illinois, California, and so forth, is because we've lost the concept of American republicanism, that the counties need representation in that state government to keep those idiots in the cities in check. Bottom line, counties should be able to, like Seattle and King County, or New York and whatever that county is, or Chicago and that county, those counties should be able to utilize draconian measures. And if those actually have the ability, because bottom line, your counties are your sovereigns over certain things. And if we allow them to do this, then they can't necessarily destroy the state. But here's my thought, and here was my supposition, that states, preferably counties, should be able to start passing laws of self-quarantine, whether it's the flu, coronavirus, even the cold. It's going to force changes. Obviously, when you shift your paradigm to say, you know what, instead of being reactive, instead of declaring martial law and forcing everybody home so that you can't work, you can't go to restaurants, and only essential places. So by doing that, what we're talking about, we're looking at a draconian measure of forcing everybody to go hide. What they need to do is they need to go and start creating laws that if you have, and you know you've got the symptoms, you run in a fever, you're running a runny nose and a cold, you've got a sore throat or what have you, that means you've got a virus. If you have a virus, you need to self-quarantine yourself until you're no longer contagious, just like what Ted Cruz did. That's what a good, conscientious American would do. Now, I was derided by, I would call them anarchists, health freedom anarchists. That's not fair. And they really took things out of context. But that's okay. At least we've got a conversation and a debate going on this. But the fact of the matter is, if you don't like the fact that your state and your county already has laws to use draconian measures, why not allow them to at least pass preventive laws instead of reactionary laws, like martial law and locking everybody down? They already have laws on the books that require that your tires can't be bald. They do this in enforcement of tire centers. If you want to rotate your tires, oh, I'm sorry, your tires are too bald, we can't touch them. The only thing we can do is put new tires on those wheels. And so they basically hold you, instead of having a sheriff going around checking your tires or the local law enforcement. Now, they will pull you over if they see bald tires and the tread gone and actually showing the belt and the radials underneath. They will pull you over for safety. That is strictly a safety matter. And, oh, that is one of the objects of government, is to protecting lives. It's a sad day in America that we just shrug off the fact that so many people are going to die based on the flu, and we have no proactive laws in helping people be protected. Are you kidding? We need to start looking at the paradigms. We'll probably bring this up again, but we'll hopefully on our next episode, we'll even have better content for you. God bless and have a great one. Oh, I'm G.R. Mobley, Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution.
So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.